It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I am so incredibly excited.
The Green New Deal has an estimated price tag of $7 trillion, but its freshman champion, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, doesn't want to talk about that.
So the resolution itself does not have a price tag on it, which is why we address each individual project on its own.
It is certainly ambitious, moving America to 100% clean and renewable energy by 2030 through major investment increases in wind and solar power, sweetened with generous tax incentives. And it would modernize U.S. infrastructure, upgrade or replace every building for energy efficiency, and create an economic safety net for low-income communities. But in trying to achieve those net zero emission goals, organizers are trying to get a handle on practical limits, admitting in earlier drafts that, quote, we aren't sure that we'll be able to fully get rid of farting cows and airplanes that fast. That odorous description was omitted from the eventual online version. But the plan extends beyond the environment, guaranteeing job security and paid vacation, and it promises economic security for all those who are unable or even unwilling to work.
So when our default is renewable, when our default investments are clean, then all of us, by default, regardless of income, will have access to those energy sources.
Some 2020 presidential hopefuls were quick to jump on board, including Senators Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Cory Booker. They used words like bold and excited in supporting the resolution. But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, in an interview with Politico, referred to it as the Green Dream or whatever they call it. Nobody knows what it is, but they're for it, right?
Quite frankly, I haven't seen it, but I do know that it's enthusiastic, and we welcome all the enthusiasms that are out there.
Ocasio-Cortez didn't take offense when asked about it.
No, I think it is a green dream. I don't consider that to be a dismissive term. I think it's a great term.
And it has earned the seal of approval from former Vice President Al Gore, who called the goals ambitious and comprehensive.
All right, that was Mike Emanuel on Fox News just recently. And recently, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced this Green New Deal, named after the New Deal proposed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt during the 1930s to rebuild the American economy. We'll get to that in just a second. What are people saying about it? Well, Michael Ahrens, in a press release, says, congratulations, you get a new house. Rachel Bovard, who writes for Jim DeMint's organization, wrote an article called Green New Deal from Woke to Broke. And Kim Strassel tweeted on this once she saw the details. She said, by the end of the Green New Deal resolution and accompanying fact sheet, I was laughing so hard I nearly cried. If a bunch of GOPers plotted to forge a fake Democratic bill showing how bonkers the party is, they could not have done a better job. It is beautiful. So that's Kim Strassel. Well, the Green New Deal. So are we to just laugh at this, or are we to consider that this is a revelation, kind of the underbelly of what the left really is pursuing? I've asked two people who live and breathe this and know a great deal about it to join us this morning so that we can flesh it out and find out what this is and how concerned we should be. Myron Ebell is the director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myron has been following all things energy, the environmental movement, and all of this for decades, and he is really one of the nation's leading experts. Tom Pyle is the president of the American Energy Alliance, which, as you can see, is a group of people who, well, I'll have Tom explain it better, but their main interest and understanding is oil and renewable energy. And so he is going to offer up his position on this Green New Deal. But first, Myron. Myron, when this actually came out, a week or so ago. Were you surprised or shocked by any of it?
Sandy, it's crazy, but it's where the left has been going on trying to put environmental issues together with their economic agenda and their social justice agenda for a long time. So it's not just turning our energy economy upside down. It's also ending income inequality, guaranteeing jobs and income for everyone, and also addressing all of the social grievances that various groups in this country have. So it's really a utopian vision that is even crazier than it sounds, but it's also a serious threat. So it's not something we can just laugh off. I think we can ridicule it, but I don't think we can just write it off as a gift to conservatives.
You know, Myron, this reminds me of, I can't think of the name of the bill right now, but J. Christian Adams and Hans von Spakovsky, they did a hearing a couple of weeks ago about a bill that is kind of a wish list, a nightmare for the rest of us, about what the left has in mind for our voting system, you know, really legalizing voter theft, I think, broad sweeping applications. And so it was kind of breathtaking, too. Like what? You want to do what? And then this? So it's like a laundry list of everything they would love to see happen in our voting process, which would be a nightmare for people who actually want their vote to count. And would you say that this is something kind of like that, like this grand plan that is what they'd really like, but it's kind of beyond what they can do right now?
Yes, it's the left's plan to completely remake society by forcing people to use the kinds of energy and the amount of energy that they know best is what people should use. So, you know, forget your car. You'll either have a small electric car or there'll be a lot more mass transit, and they're going to build high-speed trains everywhere. So even if you live out in rural areas, you might not, you know, in the last few, need a car anymore. The plans are so crazy that they would say that we would rebuild our entire energy infrastructure in 10 years. Well, we can't even, in this country now, we can't even permit a single new project in 10 years. So you can see how it's going to really change our government a little. We won't have environmental permitting anymore, you know, sweep aside the Endangered Species Act protections. We'll just go ahead and build things wherever we want as fast as we can do it. That's the idea. Using you know, money that's printed by the federal government. There's no plan to pay for this. You mentioned the cost, but the costs are much higher than that. They're higher than the annual gross domestic product of the United States. So
it is breathtaking, and we're going to break it down more, but you've given us a taste of it. I want to add, I quoted Kim Strassel a few minutes ago. She also tweeted that the sheer number of turbines, solar panels, and facilities necessary just for the renewable electricity bit of this, you would need 500,000 square kilometers, bigger than California. And also, she mentions, of course, back to the money, that the government would pay for this, not the private sector. So, Tom, Thomas, again, the president of the American Energy Alliance. And, Tom, first of all, before I ask you a question, kind of give us an idea of what the American Energy Alliance does.
Sure. We are a watchdog for folks on the radio listening right now. Our job is to get the what's going on in Washington out to real folks and empower them to be educated and weigh in with these politicians when it comes to abundant and affordable and reliable energy.
Okay, so as you looked at this Green New Deal, I'm sure you guys combed it over immediately and have kind of had a chance to digest it now. Tell us what this would do to the energy industry in the United States. Help us to understand the impact of this as she's laid it out here.
Well, in short, it would be the complete destruction of the energy industry as it exists right now, which would mean for us, it would mean if we got energy at all, if it wasn't rationed, it would be impossibly expensive. And really, it would serve only the very wealthiest of us And so I find that the plan, because the author of it claims she's trying to help low-income people or, you know, people of color, of all these, you know, sort of disenfranchised groups that she claims is actually will hurt them the most. I call this plan, I sum it up in four words: unnecessary, impossible, irresponsible, and most importantly, immoral. There's just no way this is going to happen. This is frustration because the green left has been trying ever since the beginning of this energy revolution that we've enjoyed to destroy it, to stop it, and they have failed. And so really this is sort of a wish list of all the things that they haven't been able to do, which is stop the United States from becoming the, you know, the preeminent power, the dominant force in the energy world, bringing low-cost, affordable energy not only to us, but to deliver it around the world and lift millions of people in poverty around the world. So this is a poverty plan. It's a socialist, you know, wish list tied up in a green bow, basically.
You've touched on it, but I think it would be really a good thing for you, because you are an expert on this, to kind of help us understand what you just said. There has been an energy revolution. Natural gas has, the discovery of so much natural gas in this country, in our landmass, has made us really the leader in developing energy in the world. Tom, say more about that, if you would just paint the picture so that we can understand what's at stake here.
Yeah, so roughly 10 years ago, our politicians were clamoring about how we're running out of these resources and we have to, you know, get off of them and get on renewable energy simply because we can't, quote-unquote, drill our way to low gas prices or energy independence. Well, yeah, gas was expensive about 10 years ago. We were paying $4 a gallon. But, you know, the industry itself, the innovators in the natural resources industry, developed technologies that enabled us to access the vast reserves that the United States has. We've long blessed with these vast natural resources. And now we're beginning to see the greatest expansion of energy production in practically the history of the world, if not at least the modern world. And we're delivering low-cost, affordable energy to all Americans, no matter their race, sex, creed, or color. We have drilled our way to prosperity. And as this revolution continues, we're going to continue to not only provide for ourselves, but to export a lot of these resources, which will reduce our trade imbalance and deliver low-cost, affordable energy to those who are currently are living in poverty in pockets of the world, like in India and Africa and other places. So this is the energy real deal, I call it. You know, we are in the middle of an amazing expansion. It is what has led to or contributed to the expansion of economic opportunity. And these guys don't like it, and they want to take it all away, and or more importantly, they want to control energy, because then they control who gets to do what, where, when, why, and how. It's a power trip, a power play more than anything.
Let me try something. I think it would be really helpful. I find even my, you know, I kind of grew up with the understanding of gas and oil and natural gas and all of that. But I think it would be very helpful if the two of you helped me break down what would happen. Now, we're just talking about the energy portion of this proposal of Ocasio-Cortez. We haven't even talked about the rest of it. But if we, in fact, did go to completely green energy, what would that mean in terms of driving our cars, transportation in general, heating and cooling our houses and other things? We'll talk about that when we return. My guests are Maya Niebel, who's the director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and Tom Pyle, who is the president of the American Energy Alliance. It is called the Green New Deal, and we have just barely touched the surface of what this thing is allegedly supposed to be. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. Boys and girls as young as 8 are being trafficked and sold into the red light areas of Mumbai, India. Many of the young girls become mothers. India Partners operates safe houses away from the red light districts of Mumbai where children of trafficked women can escape the brothel areas and be relocated. $7.08 provides one day of safety, rescue, and care for a child. If you'd like to help, call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396 or go to AFR.net.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
As you know, Congresswoman, one reason that people who are politically conservative are skeptical of efforts to combat climate change mm-hmm. is that it sounds to them like it requires massive government intervention, mm-hmm. which they just mm-hmm. don't like. Are you prepared to put on the table that, yes, actually, they're right. What this requires is massive government intervention?
It does. It does. Yeah, I have no problem saying that. Why? Because we have tried their approach for 40 years. For 40 years, we tried to let the private sector take care of it. They said, we got this. We can do this. The forces of the market are going to force us to innovate, except for the fact that there's a little thing in economics called externalities. And what that means is that a corporation can dump pollution in the river and they don't have to pay for it, and taxpayers have to pay for cleaning up our air, cleaning up our water, and saving the planet. And so we've already been paying the costs, except we have not been getting any of the benefit. And so what we're here to say is that government is not just for cleaning up other people's mess, but it's also for building solutions in places where the private sector will not.
That was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on NPR responding to the question about whether this is massive government intervention. She said she's got no problem with that. It is massive government intervention. We're talking about the Green New Deal, and my guests are Myron Ebell of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Tom Pyle of the American Energy Alliance. Myron, just respond to that, if you would. Her explanation of why this is important.
Well, I like the fact that she's honest. It would take massive government intervention in people's lives. The government would be in charge of telling you exactly how much energy you can use and what kind of energy. Now, the problem with it isn't just that it's a massive transformation of society. It's that it, and Tom already said this, it won't work. There is no way that you can have an electric grid that runs just on windmills and solar panels, because those are interruptible and variable. So the sun only shines part of the time. The wind stops blowing at certain times. So the more renewables you get into the grid, the electric grid, and less natural gas and coal that runs all the time, and nuclear, the more unstable the grid becomes, and you're going to have a crash. So I don't think that really matters to the people who, that it won't work. I don't think that matters to the people who, like Ocasio-Cortez, who are promoting it, but it should matter to consumers who actually want the lights to go on when they flip the switch. And if we're all going to have electric cars, they want, you know, it to get charged overnight and, you know, not have the power go off so that there's no charge the next morning. I think what people need to confront is not the leftist ambitions of the plan, but just the fact that practically speaking, it won't work.
You know, I was just trying in my mind to imagine, Myron, if we had, sometimes it's hard for us to comprehend. We have such abundance. We never do without. I always say this, you know, when I was a kid and I was out playing, and I used to get really thirsty when I play out in the summer, and I would not want to go inside, and so I would literally be dying of thirst. I wanted to drink so badly, and I would run back to my house, and this sounds silly, but there was a special cup metal glass my mother used to use for cold water, and I remember how that felt. I say that because, you know what? Nobody in our culture even knows what it's like to be thirsty for 5 minutes, because we have a cup in our hands, we are drinking all the time, and it's the same with energy. We don't have any idea what it's like to be really hot and really cold and really hamstrung by no energy. But perhaps if we thought of natural disasters where people are out of power, like Puerto Rico recently, or many areas of the state, Houston and North Carolina, where people go without electricity or power for weeks on end, people can understand why it's not a good thing to suddenly not have power and to have it be so unreliable. Tom, there's another sponsor for this bill. And it's, well, there's several. There's like it's 20 in the House, and there's like six or seven senators. And Congress, Ed Markey is one of the other supporters of this. Is he? I thought he was a senator, but he's a congressman, I guess. He was asked about part of this, and I want you to hear it, and I love your response. Here's Congressman Ed Markey answering a question from Kelly Pickett. Let's listen.
There's concerns that they're saying that you'd want to phase out the combustion engine in the next 10 years and how that would affect air travel, how that would affect private travel as far as cars and generally airplanes. Can you tell me about that?
Who are you with? I'm sorry.
With SiriusXM, Patriot 125 and the Daily Caller. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the legislation calls for the implementation of all technologies which are technologically feasible. So, for example, the airline industry has already cut their greenhouse gases by 80%. They're investing in new technologies. So, in that one instance, it would call for them to do what is technologically feasible, you know, as we're moving forward. So,
what's that exactly?
That's what I'm saying. That's to be determined. Have you got a copy of the resolution?
Not in front of me.
Yeah, so if you take a look at it, you'll be able to see where it just says technologically feasible.
Would that put the private jet business out of business, basically?
Excuse me?
Would that put the private jet business out of business?
No, it says calls for the industry to do what is technologically feasible.
What's that exactly?
That's what I'm saying. To be determined over the next 10 years. That's what the legislation calls for.
So you don't know exactly yet?
It doesn't actually have a specific technology that it talks about.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, so excuse me. So Tom Pyle, honestly, what is the Green New Deal's, what would its effect be on air travel?
Well, Senator Markey's usually not at a loss for words. He was unusually quiet there.
Yes.
What the technologically feasible is such a weird term. Why bother at all? I mean, when does the industry not do what is technologically feasible? When it doesn't make economic sense. That's how we got the vast amount of production that we have now, in part because when the prices of energy went up so high, it began to make sense economically for them to use technologies which they had on the shelf per se, but wouldn't have been able to use. So what they're saying is, I don't care what the cost is, like Myron said, the government's just going to print the money. There's nothing in this. It's a resolution, right? First of all, and they're calling it legislation. And really the media is being awfully, awfully complimentary here to something that is just basically an organizational document.
But Tom,
let
me ask you, this is in your wheelhouse. What, tell us, we know that if we can't have gasoline, we can't drive our cars. We know that if we don't have electricity, we don't have heating and cooling, at least in some parts of the country. In others, it would be coal for oil and that sort of thing for heating. But what else would that mean to us? What would we not have if we don't have fossil-based fuels or nuclear power? What else would we not have?
Well, we'd have a lot less food. We'd have a lot less clothing, or at least everything that we had would be vastly more expensive and likely out of reach for millions, if not hundreds of tens of millions of Americans, because they would be so expensive. We would have energy rationing. Look, we have a real world foreshadowing of this. In the Midwest area and up in the Northeast, whenever it gets really cold, we are being asked by the utility providers, the residents are being asked to lower their thermostats because they have switched over to renewables and natural gas, but yet the same environmentalists that are pushing this Green New Deal won't allow pipelines to be built so the gas can't actually get to the markets. And so there's literally energy rationing taking place right now in the United States, and they aren't even anywhere near what the Green New Deal says they have to have in terms of renewable energy. So it's hard to imagine what it would be like. It's so fantastical that you'd basically be going back to the caveman days, or at least the horse and buggy days.
Yeah.
That is how it would stop society as it exists today.
Well, let me ask,
Tom, we do have another. We have another example. It's called Venezuela. What's happening in Venezuela is what we could expect if the Green New Deal were actually implemented by a leftist dictatorship, or we would have a command and control economy that would cease to operate.
Yeah, you know, Myron, it's interesting you should mention that, because that, in spite of this, we're talking about the energy portion of this, as you alluded to earlier, it promises high-quality health care for everyone. And that did make me think of an article that just came out a few days ago showing the horrendous state of medicine in Venezuela. How people have to, when they go into the hospital, they really get no care. They're having to actually pay for services, and they don't have the money to pay for those services. So that is socialism at its best, and that's one of the parts, amazingly enough, of this Green New Deal. And also, I think you guys, I know you will well remember when President Obama said that under my plan, energy costs will necessarily skyrocket. And I saw an estimate, I don't know if you would agree with this, Myron and Tom, but I saw an estimate that the Green New Deal would increase electric bills alone to $3,800 per year. Do either of you have numbers, other numbers you could offer on that?
Well, that would probably be a low number. It would be basically an estimate on sort of a snapshot of today. It's just impossible. Like I said, it probably defies the laws of physics. I haven't run numbers on that, you know, but there's just no way this can happen. And it really is a wish list of sort of socialist dogma wrapped up, like I said earlier, in a green bow. It's an organizing document for the very, very hard left progressive side of the Democratic Party that are catering to these extreme environmental organizations who have tried, like I said, these all these years while we have been growing our economy and fueled by our energy renaissance, they have tried at every step of the way to stop it. And so this is sort of the next stage of that continuing literal war with affordable energy that the Greens have had.
You know, Myron, you wrote an article since this Green New Deal came out. In the text of this fact sheet that was on Ocasio-Cortez's website, now taken off, it says the Green New Deal achieves this through a World War II scale mobilization that focuses on the robust and creative economic engine of the United States on reversing climate change by fully rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, restoring our national ecosystems, dramatically expanding renewable power generation, overhauling our entire transportation system, upgrading all of our buildings, jumpstarting U.S. clean manufacturing, transforming U.S. agriculture, and putting our nation's people to work. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. I want to zero in on the World War II scale mobilization. You wrote an article about that. Explain why you don't think that's even quite capturing it.
Well, people have forgotten what the New Deal was, and they've also forgotten what the kind of mobilization required for World War II. The New Deal in the 1930s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's response to the Great Depression, was really just a series of trial. It was a trial and error kind of thing. Congress would enact a program to create some sort of jobs program, and then they'd try another one. And it wasn't successful, but it was at least based on experience. That is, they were trying different ideas and see what would work. Nothing worked. What got the United States out of the Great Depression was the Second World War, when the entire economy was mobilized under a command and control structure out of Washington, D.C., which put everything into the war effort. Over 40% of the economy was being used on the war effort, and consequently, people had rationing. Virtually everything that you use in life was rationed. You couldn't buy a new automobile. Gasoline was rationed. Tires were rationed. Most kinds of food were rationed, including coffee, sugar, meat, eggs, butter, the document quite honestly says that to achieve these goals, we would have to mobilize like we did in World War II. Well, of course, we're not in a wartime situation, and I doubt that the American people would put up with it. They did put up with it in World War II. There was a lot of grumbling. there was a certain amount of cheating, and some political opposition did arise. But by and large, people, you know, put their shoulders to the wheel and gave up the things that we take for granted. But you know, that's what I do like about this Green New Deal is they're very upfront about what their agenda is.
So based on, let's assume they could do this, that we could go to completely renewable energy and we wouldn't use any nuclear, we wouldn't use any fossil fuels. And so they claim that if we get to that, we can reverse climate change. I'd like to talk about that to both ask you, is that possible? I think I know the answer, but we're going to talk about it when we return. My guests are Myron Ebell and Tom Pyle. Myron is with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and Tom is with the American Energy Alliance. Myron has written a couple of great articles on this recently. We'll put them on our Facebook page so that you can read and share them, so that you can explain this to your friends, because this isn't going away. Just because it's not going to pass right now doesn't mean it's dead in the water. This is that wonderful plan the big planners in the sky or in Washington have in mind for you. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. Boys and girls as young as 8 are being trafficked and sold into the red light areas of Mumbai, India. Many of those little girls become mothers. India Partners operates safe houses away from the red light district. A day in a safe house includes full room and board, full-time Christian school, private tutoring, medical attention, counseling, and sharing the love of Jesus. All of this for $7.08 a day. If you'd like to help, call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or go to AFR.net.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I'm Calvin Phillips with Campus Reform. Today we're at the University of Miami talking to students about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. It sounds nice, it's ambitious, but will students support it when they find out what's actually in it? Let's talk to them and find out. The number one trending thing on social media yesterday was her Green New Deal. It's a plan to combat climate change. It was already endorsed by multiple Democrat frontrunners for president in 2020.
Yeah.
Based on what you've heard of the plan, would you say you view it favorably or unfavorably?
I view it favorably. I think that we need to cut our reliance on fossil fuels. It's definitely a great idea.
I like that it's progressive. I like that it is going to push the world forward in the way we need to be.
Anything that would reduce our dependence on fossil fuels is really important.
I definitely support this movement.
Some of the things in the plan I want to get your opinion on. So the plan says within 10 years, we're going to completely outlaw coal, natural gas, and oil. So gasoline, anything like that in 10 years.
I don't agree with that. To be honest with you, I think we need those things to live.
But I do not think it is feasible in 10 years. I don't think that that would be something that would be able to be done in such a short amount of time.
If you're unwilling to work, we will still supply help for your salary and help for a living wage.
No, absolutely not.
If you're not willing to contribute to society, then I don't think that the people who are contributing should pay for you.
Everyone needs to contribute. That's the only way society works.
I don't know about that one. I think that if you're unwilling, that I don't know if you should receive money for that.
Who's going to pay for all of it? Who's going to offset the trillions of dollar cost that it would be?
Right. I don't know.
Okay.
Nobody knows. Okay. Like, it's kind of like, who's really going to pay?
Based on what you've heard from these, does it change your perception of the plan at all?
Yeah. A lot.
Sometimes you need to take extreme measures to save the environment, but I don't think that is like, I think it's a bit too extreme.
All right, so that was Campus Reform asking students what they thought about it. Of course, when they thought that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had introduced it, then it's cool and yeah, I'm for it. But when they were actually told what it was all about, they were not for it. We should be encouraged by that. We're talking about the Green New Deal. Myron Ebell of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Tom Pyle of the American Energy Alliance are my guests. Let me just add this. In the original paragraphs that explained this New Deal, it adds a job, it guarantees to everyone a job with family-sustaining wages, family and medical leave, vacations and retirement security, high-quality education, including higher education and trade schools, high-quality health care, clean air and water, healthy food, safe, affordable, adequate housing, an economic environment free of monopolies, economic security to all who are unable or unwilling to work. And there is the plan, the Green New Deal. I want to ask you guys specifically about this part of it, because it says it wants to reverse climate change by fully rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, restoring our natural ecosystems, dramatically expanding renewable power generation, overhauling our transportation system, upgrading all of our buildings, jumpstarting U.S. clean manufacturing, transforming U.S. agriculture, meaning getting rid of cow flatulence, and putting our nation's people to work, doing what they do best. Tom, let me go to you first on this one. How could we make the globe cooler? Could we combat global warming, which is allegedly a huge problem, if we did everything they're asking here?
Well, it's hard for me to not laugh when you read that laundry list. I mean, if you think about how much concrete would be necessary to rebuild our transportation infrastructure, i.e. CO2 emissions, to retrofit every building. I mean, it's just laughable. But let's do this. Let's completely shut down the United States economy. Let's emit zero CO2. Not one bit of difference for global average temperatures. Basically, and you don't have to take my word for it, John Kerry said the same thing when he was promoting the Paris Agreement, which President Trump rightly got us out of, or is getting us out of, hopefully. He admitted that if the United States shut down its economy completely and we emitted zero CO2, that it would not, quote-unquote, reverse the catastrophic climate change that these folks are claiming that this is all about. So it's not going to work. It's not going to matter. I don't want to keep dwelling on this, but it's fantasy. It's pie in the sky. It is designed to fool these, you know, fool people into believing that they care about them when, in fact, they're basically lying to them. Those students are a perfect example. On paper, it sounds great. When you ask them one aspect, one detail, they're like, no, that doesn't work. No, that doesn't make sense, right? It's just it's that next level of explaining to people what this really means. And it's our jobs, Myron, myself, and others, to get out there and preach that to make sure that people understand exactly where that these folks want to take us. Myron's right. They want to take us to Venezuela.
Myron, let me ask you, because you followed this for so long, it wasn't Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez who came up with this plan. I mean, she's the face, and she is the compelling face to the left, but who is behind this?
Sandy, there are many authors of the Green New Deal, because it's a very amorphous package. But the first people who really brought it to public attention were the Green Party. Jill Stein ran for president a couple of times, and she and the Green Party developed the Green New Deal. We've talked about how ridiculous it is and impossible and how extreme and it won't work and all these things. But the problem is it really does move the debate to the left, and I think the problem we already see in Congress is that Republicans are being advised, well, you can't beat something with nothing. We have to have a responsible alternative, because otherwise, you know, well, in fact, you can beat something with nothing. In fact, that's the way it usually works. It's when you start putting compromise proposals on the table that you start giving ground. What the real danger here now is a vast new carbon tax, a tax on CO2 emissions, carbon dioxide emissions from burning coal, oil, and natural gas. That's what big business is pushing. That's what liberal Republicans in the House are pushing. And that's what some billionaires behind them are pushing. But it does now open some space for people to come forward and say, hey, we really need a carbon tax. And people need to be paying more for their energy. And in fact, Ocasio-Cortez said that, you know, we're not paying the real price for our energy, and we need to jack up the price so that people understand what the real price is.
It's like the immigration debate, where the left wants, like, no borders, no rules, that immigrants, illegal immigrants have all the rights of citizenship and all the benefits and all the finances and everything. Well, that seems a bridge too far. So the Republicans then will suggest, well, maybe we won't have all the wall, and maybe we won't enforce all of our laws. And, you know, so they'll come to some middle ground, which is, would have been absolutely reprehensible before the other side went so far off the cliff. And it's the same way on this energy bill. And you're saying we are in danger now of Republicans trying to find that middle ground, which is no middle ground at all. It would have been far on the left before this plan was introduced. Tom, let me ask you about, you've alluded to this, but let's talk about it for a second. This really will hit people who are poor the hardest. Can you make your case for that? Help us to understand why that is.
Well, look, we all have to pay for energy in some way, shape, or form, whether we fly on a, we buy an airline ticket or go to the grocery store, buy Christmas presents, pharmaceuticals, our car, obviously, the gas, and the obvious one, our electricity bill. The poorest among us pay a much higher percentage of their income on energy. They have to pay those things first. And so the more expensive it is, the less they have to do anything else with the limited resources they have. The more expensive an automobile is because of green energy policies, the harder it is for them to get into that first car. The more, quite candidly, if you do this, you destroy economic opportunity. Those jobs go away first. President Trump has brought back manufacturing jobs in this country. Those are largely energy jobs, or at least jobs that require a lot of energy for the output that those jobs are creating. Those are the folks that get hit the hardest by expensive, intermittent, unreliable energy. And this is a grand recipe for keeping those who are in poverty, and for those in the bottom and middle classes to keep them from moving up and having upward mobility in our society. So they are harming, literally harming the people that they're rallying and running around claiming to be wanting to protect from these policies. It's immoral.
They're promising things that they can't do. They're promising destruction. And they want us all to be, as I have been in so many communist countries, you guys, that's what I spent a lot of my life doing. I was in Russia and I was in North Korea. I was in China several times. And what happens is that people all suffer the same. That's their idea of fairness. Nobody gets hardly anything except for the handful of elites. That's what this pattern is always. And Myron, this reminds me very much, the best example of this that's on the headlines recently is the Yellow Vest riots in Paris, don't you think?
Yes, and of course they were sparked this fall when the price of gasoline was put up once again by the government. The government that knows best what people, how people should live, and you know, gasoline now in France is $7 to $8 a gallon. So you can see why they're rioting. I wonder what will happen here when the electricity starts going off. That happened in Australia as a result of closing coal plants and adding a lot of windmills and solar panels, and they had protests there, and they voted out the government. So,
Well, and Myron, yeah. It's fair to say the Yellow Vests are middle class people. A lot of them live in the country areas of France, and they depend on their cars to get at places they have to go, and they just are crushed. I played several times. I covered France pretty intensely when it was at. I know it's not over yet, but I heard people talking about how they couldn't even buy things for their children for Christmas because the poverty level has gotten so great among the middle class because of the crush of these energy prices. And so that is our future if we allow the left to go crazy on this. Myron, do you think there's a chance of passing a bill like this?
Well, I don't think that the package is going to go anywhere. As the sponsors kept saying, this is just a resolution, it's not a bill. But I think pieces of it are definitely on the agenda. I think the electric vehicle tax credit, $7,500 to buy an electric vehicle, is starting to run out. And I think there will be huge pressure in Congress to renew it. The wind and solar subsidies are starting to ramp down. I think there will be tremendous pressure to renew them. So the special interest handouts, I think, are the things that are most likely to go forward with this package. Tom may have some other items that he thinks are likely, but those, just off the top of my head, those are the things that I think besides the carbon tax.
Yeah.
I think taxes, you know, the government, everybody in Congress wants more revenue because they want to spend more money. And so I think we're going to see a very strong push from the middle, including a bunch of Republicans, for raising your energy taxes.
Tom, same question to you.
Yeah,
what do you say?
I agree with Myron. I wanted to add something, too, though. A lot of these candidates who are running on the Democratic ticket have all embraced this as part of their platform. Look, we're all very comfortable right now with the person in the White House with respect to regulatory issues. He's working very hard to break down those regulatory rules to help us get the economy moving, including President Obama's environmental agenda, which he's dismantling. These guys can easily come back and do those things and declare climate change a national emergency and try to do a lot of this stuff through executive power. So it's a real threat, in my view, both short-term and long-term.
Yeah. All right. Excellent discussion. Myron Ebell of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Tom Pyle of the American Energy Alliance, thank you both very much for so much of your time today. And we're all in this together, but I think you've helped people understand why this is indeed so crucial. Bottom line is, elections do matter. It matters who you vote for, and you need to pay attention to how they feel on this particular policy. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.